Grandpa's got some very special for you.
Grandpa, Grandpa, you kidding?
What else you got there, Grandpa?
You are very, very special.
Grandpa, you kidding?
Yeah.
But Mom, I like the taste of blood. Grandpa says it's good for me.
Yeah.
Why does it continue to single out Tom over the other children? The only thing left to do is for me to go deal with him myself.
This is not just any Halloween.
You have taken my husband from me.
But after all these years, you are still a temptation to me.
Ever since my father died on Halloween night, this day seems to really affect her, you know?
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
Remember, Roger, I want you to check out that cemetery. There's been another grave overturned.
Sure, Sarge. I know it's a grave situation, but I'll get to the bottom of it.
So what does Nora Bennington have that I don't have?
For one thing, a tattoo on her butt.
I'm Lady Godiva. Want to play my horsey?
Brian and I could play trick or treat.
Your trick, his treat.
The power is the blood.
First we had the fake spider. Now we have the fake hand.
But he killed my boyfriend, Grandpa!
You have intruded upon the ceremony of blood. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hello, this is PJ Souls from Halloween and Innocent Prey and Carrie and totally a lot of other movies, and you are listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back. This is episode 146, and we're in the last, dying days of summer, but we're going fast forward to Halloween with Hack-O-Lantern as our main feature of the week. And before, we've got a very special guest, but before we introduce her, I just want to say a big thank you to Bill Ackerman, who got us that PJ Souls intro.
Awesome.
It was very awesome.
Thanks, Bill.
Yes. He did try and get Daphne Zuniga as well, but her PA or something wasn't too keen on her mentioning the dorm that dripped blood. But maybe one day Daphne will come over to the dark side. But we're very excited to have with us again a very special guest. Always welcome on the show is Amanda Reyes. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm okay. I wanted to make a really big announcement, if I could.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of amazing things happening lately. You know, I had a book come out, and I'm on a commentary track for the new DVD Blu-ray release of The Spell, which is a TV movie. But I'm going to give it all up because I think I'm going to become a pumpkin salesman.
I think, sounds like a career move.
Yeah. I got so inspired by Hack-O-Lantern, I've decided to give it all up and go door-to-door in my truck.
I'm going to become a hair metal superstar.
Who gets decapitated in their own music video?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good.
Who's
Although I do want to be the guy, the drummer with the enormous perm in the party scene.
That was a big perm.
Oh,
who's going to get a satanic symbol tattooed on their butt?
Cool.
I'm going to do that too.
Why not?
Well, it's not really a tattoo. It's more of a brand, really.
Well, they said it was a tattoo, didn't they, on the woman's...
Yeah, but then you see somebody getting branded on the butt with the symbol.
Yes.
So like a cattle brand.
Mm. Yeah. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we?
We are.
We're going to be talking about...
I'm so excited.
I know. But yes, fantastic to have Amanda with us, who, of course, is the author-editor of Are You in the House Alone?, the TV movie compendium, which every good home should have, and also co-hosts the made-for-TV Mayhem podcast, co-hosting with Nathan, our very own Nathan, who's kind of moonlighting on the side. So great to have you with us, Amanda. Looking forward to... You wrote a review, didn't you, on Hysteria Lives of this movie not that long ago. So it'd be interesting to see if your opinion's changed. I got around to seeing it this time, so I'll talk about what I thought about it. But Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to hack a lantern. And I think you are all very, very special.
Well, we know Eric's special, don't we? How are you doing?
Hey, what? I know what context you're using it in, and it's not very nice.
You're a special little snowflake to us, Eric.
I am a special little snowflake.
Exactly. But you're doing okay?
Yeah.
We haven't recorded for a little while, so it'd be good to get the gang back together again. And Joseph, how are you doing?
You're the voice. Try and understand it. Make a noise and make it clear. Whoa,
oh, whoa, 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 whoa. That was a song.
We're not going to sit. We're not going to sit in silence, Eric.
We're not going to live in fear. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Can you?
I don't know why you're singing The Voice by John Farnham, but hey, I like it.
Because I've been watching.
Oh, I thought you were singing New Kids on the Block.
I've been watching the movie Hot Rod, which features a musical montage to that song, and it's hilarious. So,
is that movie funny?
Yes, it's very surreal, but I love it.
Oh, and Jostin, I'm very disappointed you didn't introduce
Jostin,
director.
Jostin,
that's your couple name.
Yeah, it's like Brangelina.
I guess me and Eric is Narek.
Yeah.
Or Eon. Eel.
But Justin, I'm disappointed you didn't introduce me as the director of Hackleween.
Well, I didn't. You know, I know you could get a big head, apparently. With that, so but are you going to talk about your, was it a tribute to this film or was it, did you come up with it?
Well, what I saw was a, just a second, Stripes, quit, thank you. I had done is I'd seen the title for this movie, Hack-O-Lantern. So when I was about, I don't know, I was 10 or 12 years old, I had one of those like really giant camcorders, and I made a movie called Hackleween, but unfortunately it was my grandpa's camcorder, and like there was no other kids around where he lived. So my cast was me as the killer stalking a broom and a mop as they were like on a date. And
of course
I don't remember a whole lot. I don't know where it's at now. I wish I could find it because I would post it. But I don't remember where it's at. I just remember in one scene, the broom got stabbed through, like, the broom bristles. That was his head.
Oh, no.
So the knife went right through it easily. So it was like, oh, no, the broom is dead. And then the mop, you know, thought she killed me. But then, like, I jumped up. Like, it was sort of like a tribute to the ending of Friday the 13th. And I did all the slow motion myself. I moved real slow.
That's so Jeff Franco of you.
Yeah,
it was such a great film, and the mop survived because you know I got to have somebody surviving.
So the mop is still out there.
Nathan could come up with the line, "The mop thought she killed me." It's not a sentence you hear every day.
No, so it's very Herschel Gordon Lewis of you to have a mop and a broom in your movie.
Yeah, of course, without any blood because they didn't bleed at all. Neither did I.
So it's like a G-rated slasher movie.
Yeah, I don't even think there's any cursing in it.
Oh, a good Christian slasher movie, Broom and the Mop. So,
yeah, that was me.
And we know that Hack-O-Lantern is the opposite of Christian, don't we? Of all that satanic worship in it, which we'll be talking about later. Yeah, so we'll obviously have to, you know, protect ourselves from evil. But talk amongst yourself. I've just realised I'm not plugged in. As in, my MacBook plug is not plugged in, so I might suddenly shut up. So quickly chat amongst yourselves. Well, why don't you actually? We're going to talk a little bit about recently seen. I'll only be away for two shakes of lamb's tail because I just need to go and plug it in. But Amanda, what have you been watching recently?
Well, I've been hanging out at the Alamo Drafthouse a lot, and they do this thing called Terror Tuesdays. And I know I can't talk about everything I've been watching, but they show so many good things. And earlier this month, they showed Boarding House on the big screen, which was really psychedelic because they blew up whoever, you know, when they originally made it a theatrical print, they blew up what they shot it on originally. Was it 16 millimeter? And they blew it up to 35. So you can only see like portions of people's faces in some scenes. And that, you know, that's a weird movie to watch on the big screen because it has like a really dirty filter to it to make it look kind of filmic. And
video, Amanda.
Yeah, but they blew it up on film. And
then, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they played it. So it's video on film with like blown up from a 16 millimeter whatever copy that they had. So it was really bizarre. And then, but I know you guys have all talked about that movie, so I won't say too much about it, except it was amazing to see it on the big screen and it was really popular with the audience. But last week they showed a movie called Effects. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but it was shot in Pittsburgh and it just came out through American Genre Film Archives, new Blu-ray release company. And they just did The Zodiac Killer as well, which I saw also at the Alamo. And, this movie was kind of lost for a long time, and they sort of restored it, and they brought Tom Savini, Dusty Nelson, who wrote and directed it, and John Harrison, who's another actor who actually is a composer who did the music for Day of the Dead, and went on, I think he directed Tales from the Dark Side, and they came and did the Q&A afterwards, and that movie is so amazing. It's I don't know if anybody here has actually seen it, but it's sort of about this group of underground filmmakers who are kind of like everything to them is about capturing something on film, and to the point of like they're creating snuff films, and there's one guy that's on the set and he's like the only legitimate filmmaker, and he has no idea what's really going on behind the scenes, and it's sort of like his journey through like this film crew's attempt to make a film. And I don't want to say too much about it, but if anybody has seen Cabin in the Fever, what's it called? Cabin Fever, the Josh Whedon movie? Is that what it's called?
Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. Why am I saying Cabin Fever? I feel like Josh Whedon saw that movie, or whoever wrote Cabin in the Woods. It really mixes like reality and fantasy and our desire to be on film and to live in a film, and like, but it was done in 1980, and it's really gritty and really well made, and I was amazing. I can't tell you how much I loved it. So that was really neat to see that. And on Tuesday we're gonna go see Ticks, if you guys remember that direct-to-video movie from the 90s.
Yes.
I love Ticks.
I know. They found a film print of it, and they're going to show it on 35mm. And then they're going to show Sleepaway Camp 2.
Oh, no. You're going to really make them jealous now.
Yeah.
Yes, although my favorite's 3, but I do love 2 a lot, too.
3 is my favorite, and they played that 2 months ago, and I went and saw it.
Oh, so, my God. I'm so jealous of you.
Yeah. What the Alamo is doing is totally amazing. But of all the films that they've played there, I think Effects has had... I don't know what the words are. It's 5 a.m, so excuse me. It had a great effect on me, is what I want to say. It was really
joke
effective.
Of the week. Yeah.
Not very good.
I have Effects on DVD. I think not Blue Underground. I think Anchor Bay brought it out way back when, but I haven't watched it in a long time, so I can't really remember that much about it. But if you're comparing it to Cabin in the Woods, I must have a rewatch, because I don't remember that element to it.
Well, it's got this meta element to it that's kind of exactly the same in a way as Cabin in the Woods, but maybe Cabin in the Woods hadn't come out yet, so it would be, you know what I mean? So you weren't thinking of effects when you were watching it.
Maybe,
but I see there's a correlation there, and it's just a really interesting, thoughtful movie. It's almost like, I don't know that you can call it horror, really. It's got horrific elements, but it's, I don't know, it's just a really weird little movie, and I really liked it, I have to say.
Cool. Okay, just out of interest, how busy do the showings get? Do you get lots of people there for them, or?
Yes. Joe Zaimba, who was the founder of Bleeding Skull and co-wrote the book for Bleeding Skull with my other podcasting partner, Dan Budnick, he is such a showman, and he's so good at bringing in these really weird films, and he almost sells out almost every week. And he's doing some new stuff, too. He's bringing in some of the newer stuff, because they get a really young audience. And, you know, they showed Lost Boys a few months ago, and this guy who was probably like 22 brought his girlfriend, and she'd never seen it before, and she was so into it. And that's half the joy of the film, is that most of the audience haven't seen a lot of these films. And they all seem to love them. So it's really exciting. Boarding House was very popular, I have to tell you. Everybody really enjoyed it because it's
really
great. Yes.
Was it a full house for Boarding House?
Yes, it was. And
people know. Oh, go ahead. They know. It's great.
They know. Well, Joe does a really good job of introing the films as well. And so if he shows something that's like kind of slower, because he showed plenty of Brothers movies. He's shown like Shaun on Video, like Crazy Underground. And he kind of like guides the audience into what to expect. And if there's content in there that he thinks might be a little objectionable, like if there's rape or something, because there's a rape scene in Boarding House that I totally forgot about. And he like kind of tells you. And so you're kind of prepared for what you're going to see in a weird way. And he also kind of makes you excited about it because he's so excited. He's really good at what he does. So I think almost every time we go, it's a full house.
Hey, did they show the... I can't remember if you said or not, or if I asked you, but did they show the full uncut version of Boarding House with the additional dialogue? Because that's the better version.
They didn't. He threatened to show it, but I think the threshold is 90 minutes for that movie, to be honest.
Oh, no, I love the 2-hour version. It's just so much fun. The dialogue's so inane. I love to listen to it.
I don't know if that's a selling point. It's really a name, guys. Here we go.
Only for me is it a selling point.
No, I mean, I'm sure it'd be amazing, but I feel like with most people not familiar with the film, maybe easing them into it, 90 minutes is probably the best way to go.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Well,
By the way, they did show Hack-O-Lantern. I did see it last year.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Amanda. Joseph, how about you? What have you been watching recently?
Well, I watched a similar movie to FX. It's a recent movie called Cut, Shoot, Kill. It's about an actress who's trying to get her start in the world. And she joins the cast of a slasher film in North Carolina. And she's a little weary about becoming a quote-unquote girl who was in that slasher film, but she accepts the role anyway because she needs the work. And basically, it's kind of meta in that same way as effects, that these filmmakers are filmmakers, but they're also part-time, snuff filmmakers. And if she wants to survive the shoot, she has to basically become the character they've written for her. And it's an interesting premise, but the direction and the editing is very infuriating. It has like no pace whatsoever. It's like so sluggish. So when it gets to the good parts, it's like too little, too late. And I did like the lead girl. She has this like Phoebe Cates kind of maybe / Ione Sky quality to her that I really liked. And the script is really smart. It's just I wish it was better directed and better edited. It could have been a little shorter. It's almost 100 minutes long. So, you know, that's a death knell for me with slasher films. But, I mean, overall, it's worth one watch. It's an interesting idea. Not quite done to its potential, but I would recommend it for one watch. It's certainly, better than a lot of the DTV kind of slasher movie direct that comes out, lately. So it's called Cut, Shoot, Kill. It has a fantastic cover art with the clapboard and a hand and holding the clapboard, and it's all bloody. So it's very eye-catching. It's just I don't think the movie's as good as the artwork, which is kind of par for the course lately with a lot of these films. But yeah, it's worth a watch.
Okay, I haven't seen that one. Anyone else seen it?
No.
But it makes me think of Cabin by the Lake. Have you guys seen that with Judd Nelson? Yes.
Is that the one with Judd Nelson? Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it makes me think of, because he's a screenwriter and he writes horror films, and he's constantly killing women so he can write his scripts better, and he's burying them in the lake, basically. And then he wants a final girl, so he seeks out a girl he thinks will really challenge him, and he kidnaps her, and then her goal is to get out of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly Cut, Shoot, Kill, almost to a science.
That's a great film, I think. I think it's really underrated. It's a TV movie. It's quite good.
It's really good.
Yeah, I saw that on the USA Network a long time ago.
That's right. That's where it premiered, yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. Because we've got limited time today, we're limiting ourselves to one movie, but we probably have a little bit more time on our next show to discuss what we're seeing. But Eric, how about you? What have you been watching?
Okay, well, I'm delighted to say I went to see Annabelle Creation. Now, Justin, ask me how I managed to see it.
Well, I know how you saw it, actually, because I saw you with a mask. Unless Cinemageddon's giving out masks now.
No, that mask I got at work. They had some promo materials for it. But I did actually pay money to go to the cinema and see Annabelle Creation. Mm. So that's that myth busted.
One time, Eric, does not stop the rumours.
Well, it better stop the rumors. Anyway, it starts in the 1940s, and it has these parents doting over their daughter in a very little house in the prairie type existence. And then the daughter gets very suddenly mowed down by a car in quite a very effective sudden shock moment. And then it cuts to 10 years later, and the parents of the dead child are taking in all these orphans who are stuck for somewhere to stay. And they're living very remotely out in the middle of nowhere. And two of the younger orphans, who are kind of the two outcasts of the group because they're not in the same age bracket, one of them is a cripple. And they start exploring the house, and they find the Annabelle doll locked in a closet that's wallpapered with pages of the Bible. And, of course, chaos ensues. So this is the weird thing about this is it's an origin story to an origin story, because it's the sequel to Annabelle, which was a prequel to The Conjuring, and this is a prequel to Annabelle. So they just keep going back and rewriting the sort of the history of the you know, the franchise. I thought it was much better than the first Annabelle, which I thought was a bit drab and lacking in incident. This one has plenty of scares. You know, it does that thing where the soundtrack goes dead quiet and then something jumps out, whether it be something spooky or a false scare. But it does that quite a lot. It's quite long. I think it's about 105 minutes. But for what it was, I mean, it's being compared in the media to being like a really effective ghost train ride, and that's what it is. But like a ghost train ride, it's kind of forgettable. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Conjuring franchise and universe. The same like with, like, they're quite good movies, Insidious, Sinister, all them. They're watchable enough, but I never find they have any rewatchability. And I think that's what's going to happen with Annabelle Creation. So while it was enjoyable for the 105 minutes, I don't think I'll ever go back and revisit it. But having said that, I mean, my opinion changes on movies all the time. So maybe in 10 years' time, I'll get a sort of nostalgic buzz for the Conjuring universe. But at the moment, it's just kind of a, you know, effective for what it is franchise, but, you know, nothing special.
Okay, I heard it was better than the first film. So
it is. It definitely is. Yeah.
Okay. Because
any of these is Annabelle or Conjuring, are they connected in any way to Insidious or Sinister? Because I've kind of lost track with all these.
They're all
prequels and all this stuff. So
they're all.
Universe that I'm not a part of.
I know. No, I don't think there's any connection between the different franchises, but they all have the similar vibe, and I think there's crossover between the people behind the scenes and on the franchises, if I'm not mistaken. But no, they don't have any story. Like the two Conjuring movies and the two Annabelle movies are tied together, but not the other ones.
Okay.
I loved the first Annabelle, so I'll probably really like this one.
Oh, I think you will, yeah.
Hmm. I didn't mind the first Annabelle. I thought there were some good bits in it. So I look forward to seeing this, but I've been away for a couple of weeks, so I didn't really fancy it. We did talk about going to cinema, but I thought seeing this in Spanish would be interesting, but mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, thank you Eric. So who haven't we spoken to? Nathan, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay.
I actually watched that new thriller movie Kidnap with Halle Berry. Where
you talked about that last time.
Did I?
Yes,
oh my
you
god,
did.
I'm insane.
Oh, Nathan.
I've lost it.
All right, that's Nathan. Nathan's done. Let's move on.
I was out very late last night. Okay, I'll go with my other one then. All right, so I watched one called Massacre in Aisle 12, but I wasn't a huge fan of it. That's why I didn't want to mention it, because I wasn't that big of a fan, and I don't like to talk bad about movies. But it, you know, it's just like a motley crew of people that work at this store come across this dead body and a bunch of cash. And I don't know. All I can say is hijinks ensue, because I thought it was going to be like a masked killer or somebody killing them off for the money. But instead, it's just like all of them like killing each other, like in freak accidents or, you know, and it just kind of got repetitive and monotonous. And unfortunately, I got a little bored and I felt really bad about that, because, you know, people put a lot of work into, you know, movies that, you know, they've worked really hard on, and I'm sitting here saying, oh yeah, it's not very good.
You kind of like everything, well, Nathan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Nathan could ever be a film cricket.
So yeah. But thank you, Joseph, for telling me. I already mentioned Kidnap, because I was looking for a movie I really liked recently, and that was the one. And then I've already talked about it, of course.
Oh, well. Well, thank you. Thank you, Nathan.
You're welcome, Justin.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, obviously, we don't want to invoke, you know, the rhubarb lady.
Yeah.
No, I'm very nice. I'm polite.
Mm. Well, you know, you have a slightly different side sometimes, Nathan, but we won't go there. But I just thought, talking of, as a limit to one film, I've seen, obviously, quite a few on holiday, but one I did watch, which has a kind of linking back to the kind of Insidious kind of those kind of films, was the actress Lynn Shay. I saw the film The Black Room, which was it was out on Netflix. So I don't know if
we've already talked about that,
Justin. Sorry, what?
Justin, you've already talked about The Black Room.
No, I have not.
My friend made that movie. My friend Rolf Kineski made that movie.
Oh, really? Really? I really enjoyed it. I thought it was because with Netflix, you can download movies to watch them offline. So I had it on the I downloaded it. It was on the Spanish Netflix, so I downloaded it from there to watch it on the plane. And I had it on my iPad, and within the first 5 minutes, there's like an Entity style kind of sex scene with sort of boobs flying asunder. So I kept on having to angle the iPad. So if anyone was watching, kept on kind of quite a lot of nudity in it. So I kept on having to try and make sure no one could see it in case I had some like sort of prim and proper or some 12-year-old behind me or something.
Justin, always breaking FAA regulations.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's probably some rules against watching nudity on international flights. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was good fun. I think it was looking at the IMDb reviews. There's a lot of one-star reviews on there. It's only got 3.4 out of 10. But I liked what he was trying to do, which is kind of making a kind of 80s-style kind of not quite tongue-in-cheek like horror movie. About a couple, Natasha Hendrich and Lucas Hassell, who kind of move into a house where Lynn Shay's been trapped in the basement, this kind of black room where essentially Satan is living after some party goes horribly wrong in the late 1960s. And it's kind of very kind of entity-esque in so much that the devil is very sexualized, so it keeps on giving people orgasms and doing strange things like putting boobs on the back of on a woman's back and sort of things like that.
So, putting the boobs on her what?
On her back. Basically, one of the characters gets possessed by this demon and goes to a restaurant and starts giving the waitresses orgasms. And when one won't play along or kind of gives him the cold shoulder, he makes her boobs shrivel up. And she runs into the bathroom and opens up her bra, and her boobs have gone really small. And then she turns around and they're on her back.
He
does a lot of like tongue-in-cheek. He did, you know, There's Something Out There. Do you remember that movie from the late 80s?
Yeah.
There's Nothing Out There.
I can't get any of these titles right. There's Nothing Out There. He did The Hazing.
Is Rolf Kineski?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that. Okay.
Yeah. I thought
he's a good guy.
Yeah,
he does a lot of sex movies too, so I'm not surprised there's not a lot of nudity. He did like the Emmanuel movies that came out the last few years.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just looking at his filmography here. Emmanuel 2000, Emmanuel's Intimate Encounters,
yes.
Sex Files.
Yes, that's his stuff too. So he's good with that. But he makes like when he does a lot of his sexy films, he tries to make like alternate versions of them, or he used to. And like, so it would be like one would be a comedy version and the other one would be the sexy version. He really loves his comedy and he's good at it. You know, a lot of his movies are like The Hazing is really fun, but it's also got like horror elements to it. And also There's Nothing Out There. He's fun.
Yeah. Well, part, if you speak to him, say that you get a little shout out on the show. Cause I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it goes for a real kind of full on 80s kind of style, kind of gross out sort of in a fun way. Like a film like Society or something like that towards the end. It's a recommendation from me. So, but don't go in expecting a straight ahead horror movie, because it's certainly not that. But if you enjoyed sort of straight to video 80s horror movies, which you probably do if you're listening to this, then I think you might get a kick out of it. So that's kind of our recently seen. So shall we move on to the main attraction?
Yes,
Daddy, come on. So whose choice was this? And before we go ahead...
It was Michael Alishan chose Michael Alishan. Hack a Lantern.
Yes, well, thank you, Michael. And who is going to intro after this? Is that going to be you, Eric?
Or is it Amanda? I don't mind.
Oh, I don't know. I don't have anything.
Okay, no, I'll do it.
Okay. Okay, well, here is, as we couldn't find a trailer. There was a trailer, wasn't it? But it's only got, like, strange music over it.
So yeah, and like, I've got the recent Massacre video Blu-ray of it, and there's no trailer on that either. So
doesn't look like there was one cut then, does it? So what we have here is a bit of stand-up comedy outside, possibly the strangest Halloween party.
it's only a short extract. Don't worry.
Well, here we go, and Eric will bring us back in after this.
What are you guys doing out here? Didn't you see the stripper in there? You didn't see the stripper? What's wrong, you guys? You should have seen her. She was great. She had like the biggest blue eyes you've ever seen. And boy, you know, she reminded me of one of those girls from the girly magazines. You ever see those girls? And the girl, like, my favorite part in there is the naked girl. I love the naked girls.
But now I got a favorite brand new part. The little memo right underneath the naked girl's picture. Because the things they say about themselves, they're not quite accurate, are they? I mean, they say things, for example, like, I'm just a conservative girl. Oh, and then you turn the page and here she's getting all emotional on you. I just need a man who understands me. Don't you understand that?
Yeah, my jokes of the week don't sound so bad now, do they? Okay, when Tommy was a boy, he saw his grandpa, the leader of a vicious satanic cult, murder his father in a brutal ritual on Halloween night. Now Tommy is 18 and grandpa is ready to indoctrinate him into the ways of the black arts. But as night approaches, someone dressed like a member of the cult, whose face is hidden behind a devilish mask, begins stalking and killing people connected to Tommy. Could it be Grandpa, Tommy himself, or someone even more sinister behind those increasingly brutal murders? And that's Hack-A-Lantern, which is a new film for my eyes. I'd never seen it before. It came out on Massacre Video on Blu-ray a couple of months ago, I think it was. So I'd said I'd buy it because I knew we were going to be covering it on the podcast. Yes, Justin, I bought it for money.
I believe
from
you,
the States.
Eric. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now, I'd always assumed that this was a shot. I don't know why. I'd always assumed this was a shot on video movie that went straight to video in the late 80s. I was half right, I suppose. It's not, but it wasn't shot on video. It looks amazing, actually, on this Blu-ray. It looks almost, you know, like it could have been a theatrically released film. It's really well made, and there are portions of it that I like quite a lot. When it behaves like a slasher film, I'm really into it. When it's the two girls, Vera and her friend, whose name I can't think of, Beth. Yeah. When they're on screen, I think it's great because it's a real traditional 80s slasher movie. It's the portions of the film that deal with the satanic cult that just I'm not interested in at all, and my, you know, it tests my patience a lot. When it flicks into hair metal mayhem, which it does on two occasions, I'm really happy. And when the slasher movie elements come in, I'm really happy. But the satanic element, I'm just bored with. And I know Grandpa is probably going to be a divisive character amongst the five of us. I found him kind of grating. I know. I mean, his delivery is kind of funny, but after a while, it just grates on me. I mean, he's the quote name actor. High Pike is his name. He's the name actor in the cast, but he's horrendous, I'm afraid. He's kind of fun for, you know, in short bursts, but I don't know. There's too much of him in it for my liking. Actually in that opening sequence where it's set sort of 13 years previously, he looks not unlike modern day Gary Newman, I thought.
With
his jet black hair. Yeah. I could watch a whole movie about Vera and her friend Beth, and I thought there was this wonderfully classy scene where Beth and Roger are getting down to business in a graveyard, which is probably something, Justin, you probably really like that scene, I'd say, because you like to have sex in graveyards, don't you?
I've never had sex in a graveyard, Derek, so I wouldn't.
Yeah, whatever. I don't believe you. But anyway, there's Beth and Roger are getting down to it, and there's a scene where Beth's trying to look really sexy with this big chunky blue sweater and her overcoat on, and off camera she's pulling down her knickers, although you don't see, but it's the most unsexy scene ever, considering that Jag Mundra, the director, went on to make softcore porn movies like with Shannon Tweed and that in the 1990s. It's surprisingly unsexy. And I also love how they find Vera's dead boyfriend in the graveyard. And whilst they show a bit of concern and they show that they're a bit upset, they still manage to go back to the party, which is weird. And the impromptu stand-up guy, which we heard there in place of the trailer, I mean, it's awful. It's really, really bad. And it's really, really cringy. But it's kind of... There's something weirdly watchable about it because it's so bad. And it makes me feel good about my jokes of the week. I feel like I'm Richard Pryor next to this dude. Because it's genuinely probably the worst stand-up routine I've ever seen in a film. It reminded me of the Yo Mama section from the start of Axum. Mm. Only you could actually hear the audio on this guy's, you know, diatribe. but you'd need to be seriously drunk to find his japes amusing. I don't know why all the people at the party are laughing at him. They must be hearing something that I'm not hearing. Yeah, so the High Pike again, he's just so campy. I don't know. I find it weird.
It's not a bad thing, though, is it? To be that.
No, but there are times where I hate it, where he's on screen. I'm like, oh, get him off. No, not get him off. As in take a shoulder.
Eric.
Get him off the screen.
Oh, Eric.
God, you're gonna isolate that clip and use it against me.
Get him off, eh, Eric? Oh. Mm.
I hate you. No, edit that bit out. No. I get him off the screen is what I mean. And there are other times where I'm like, aha, he's hilarious. And he's like a pantomime villain. He's like, you know, there are points in it where, you know, he does that gravelly voice, like, yes. And that he reminds me of Divine a bit in places.
Yes.
With his vocal delivery. And it's just the whole thing about his implied incest with his daughter and the possibility that he might actually be Tommy's father as well as his grandfather. It's really weird. It's quite sleazy. So, you know, overall, I was surprised at how incredibly technically good the film looks on this Blu-ray. I don't know what it was like on VHS back in the day, because I said this is my first time watching it, but it's technically very accomplished. The bad acting gives away its sort of low-budget origins, I suppose. And one big blooper I did find in the film, I don't know if you spotted this, but there's a scene where we just, beside Bill's gravestone, who's the father who's killed at the start, and it says he died in 1968, and then the rest of the movie is set 13 years later, which would be 1981. So why does Tommy have a dead-end drive-in poster in his bedroom then, which wasn't released till 1986. Mm. Oh, it just totally took me out of the movie because I was, you know, I was lost in the narrative up until that point. Okay.
You're trying to get the grandpa off and now you're worried about anachronisms.
I'm not in any way interested in grandpa, just to clarify, please.
So you're not in love with grandpa?
I'm not going to say that because you're going to edit out the word not. I know you too well now. Yeah. Anyway, it's a. I was surprised at how much of the film I liked because I thought it was going to be a turkey, but then I wasn't surprised at how much I didn't like. So it's a kind of a 5 or 6 out of 10 movie for me. So I know you're going to be super enthused about it, Amanda. So what do you think?
Well, I think it's funny that you say you were lost in the narrative sarcastically, because I do think the narrative's really, really fun. And I think that when we get to the revelation of the killer, I think that it's really effective in a way. And I really like the family soap opera-ness of it. Like, the mother is very much, like, after her husband dies, she's very much tied to her children. So, like, when anybody comes around, male, female, whatever, she hates them instantly. And she wants her kids at home all the time. And there's just something about that family's isolation and like the way they deal with each other that's really kind of, I don't know, I just like the way it's done. It's like, it's kind of ambitious for what the film is trying to do. But in the end, it really just comes down to grandpa. I fucking love High Pike. I love him. I love him. I love him.
Is he hot?
No, he's not. No, but I want to hang out with him. I want to like get a beer with him. I want to talk to him all day and all night. And I just want to be his best friend forever. I think he's so fun in this movie. It's a weird movie because it does have these really dramatic, I'm not saying they're super effective, but it has these dramatic elements. It's got the dynamic between the two friends, Beth and Vera, that's really well done because they feel like really close friends. But then grandpa shows up with his pumpkin truck and, you know, and is Satan worshiping, and it sort of throws a kink into whatever they were trying to get, like the effect, but it works really well for me. I think I saw this movie for the first time, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago. I saw it on a double feature bill just at my house with a movie called Swingers Massacre, and it was one of the best movie viewing nights I've had in like forever. I had such a good time with these films. I wasn't sure what to expect, and I really enjoyed it. Part of it is because the guy who plays Tommy, who by the way is not 18. Let's face it. He has to be like 30 when he made this movie. I'm friendly with him on Facebook. I really like him. I've had a huge crush on him for a long time. He's been in a lot of B movies, and And now he does. He's like in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and things like that. He does a lot of like big TV now. But he's wonderful. And he's so good in these. He's also in Click the Calendar Girl Killer, which is, I think, a better character. But I love him in this. He looks so good doing his weights and everything. And like there's just a real sense of fun to this film. And I agree. It's really beautiful to look at. It was amazing to see in 35 at the Alamo, because it does have a very filmic quality to it. And that's what that viewing actually brought out the dynamic of the family better for me. I think when I originally saw it, it was just a dub of a video. And so it was kind of like, I don't remember it looking bad, but it was like very, it didn't really capture, I think, what, I can't say the director's name properly, Jag Mundra's vision, if you will. I don't know what else to add to it. I do think it's really great. I think it's interesting. What I remember most about seeing it at the Alamo was that Tommy is so self-loathing, which makes him perfect for to take over in whatever the satanic ritual thing is that he's doing. He's so self-loathing that even in his own music videos, he dies. He gets decapitated. Like he's not even the hero in his own fantasies. And I remember when I was watching in the theater and I was thinking, wow, this guy, and it was like super effective as like a character trait. And so I think it plays in really well to the dynamic where you find out he really does love his family at the end. And there's like a misunderstanding. And, you know, and the incestuous stuff is really interesting too, you know, like how the way they film grandpa and the mom on her wedding day, and he basically rapes her. And then she gets pregnant, I guess, with Tommy. And it's very much like, I don't know what I'm saying here. It's just, it's very soapy, and that works for me. I really like the melodrama of it. I don't know that the horror elements work that well, but it's a lot of fun because they don't work that well. And I think that the actors are doing their best with what they have. And yeah, it's really fun. I think it's kind of infectious in a way. It's like a big, beautiful disease. Infectious disease. I love it.
That's the line for the box.
Holy shit, Amanda. You mentioned Gregory Scott Cummins. I was trying to remember who he was, and It's Always Sunny, so I looked him up. He's Mac's dad, and he's also in the Amazon series Bosch with Titus Welliver. Yes. I've been watching. He does not look the same now as he did in Hack-A-Lantern. I didn't even recognize him watching that. That's cool.
Yeah, he's done really well for himself, and he's super nice. You know, I dropped him a line to ask him some questions about this film, and he was going to try to get back to me, and he didn't. But we ended up talking about something else, which I'll bring up in the trivia. But he's really approachable. I actually went on his page once and mentioned a movie he made, and he actually sent me a private message to tell me that nobody's ever told him that they liked that movie and that he was really excited and he enjoyed making it. And he's a super nice guy.
What movie was it?
Very hot. He's in this movie called The Underground, which is where he's a member of a disco band, and the disco band is really pissed off that rap is taking over, so they start killing rappers. I kid you not. And Jeff Fahey is the cop that has to bring them down. It's so good.
Cool.
That does sound good. So.
Yeah. Okay, who we move on to next? Joseph, what do you think of Hack-O-Lantern?
Okay, well, the first 30 minutes of Hack-O-Lantern, to me at least, are kind of a big fat chore to get through. But, you know, once the cloaked killer shows up, the film becomes a classic for all the wrong reasons, I think. It's wall-to-wall ridiculous. I mean, it's got wall-sized hair, you know, enough nudity to make Larry Flint blush. You know, my favorite, of course, being porn legend Gina Fine. Oh, Gina, with a ridiculous bleach job. She plays the Nora character who basically she gets a garden hoe through the side of her neck and, you know, her face, you know, while she's naked and trying to seduce the killer who she thinks is Tommy. And this is spoiler alert since we always spoil this. And it's got a lot of incidental moments that are just kind of bonkers, you know, like the hand scene where Roger and Vera are rogering in the cemetery.
Justin's favorite scene.
Yeah, she actually digs through a mound of dirt and finds the hand of Brian's corpse. And I guess she's so caught up in the moment of Roger's Man of Steel diddling that she doesn't really notice that she's unearthed a dead body. You know, I also like later on when she's asked where she and Roger made love, they actually go through the trouble of including a scene where she shows her friend where they bumped uglies. Just so they could pay off that hand moment from earlier at, you know, as if the utter ridiculousness of the earlier moment needed an extra zinger all its own. But I thought the Tommy character was, you know, he's kind of the over the top red herring that just kind of screams not the killer, even though they want you to think he is. And I also like how they try to provide a twist with the murderer's identity. But I mean, if you've seen enough of these movies, and boy have I, you'll figure out who's doing it pretty much right off the bat.
Did you really?
Yes, I knew who it was the minute that character was on screen. It's just that obvious. I think the film kind of grinds to a halt in places, you know, especially during that bizarre stand-up comedy routine that you played, Eric. I think the metal glam rock scenes that pop up, you know, to and fro, are kind of, you know, incidental. You know, they're enjoyable, but they're incidental. And I think the Halloween theme almost kind of feels, you know, just as incidental. I mean, this could have really been said at any time. I don't know, but the movie is just so 1988 and so cheesy. You know, and despite the shaky first 30 minutes, you know, I was never bored. I mean, it's not quite on the Nailgun Massacre pieces spectrum of so bad it's good for me, but I think it's close enough. So a thumbs up for me, even though I carry a bit of shame saying that. I really enjoyed this little movie.
Mm. Somebody else who guessed the killer, as far as I can tell from our interactions on Facebook during the week, was Nathan.
Oh, I was very proud of myself for guessing that. Because I'm not very good at guessing the killer in movies at all. But this probably goes without saying, but I really, really enjoyed Hack Lantern. I thought that, you know, it was a lot of fun. I didn't even really mind the satanic stuff that much, but of course the slasher stuff is where I feel it really shines. Grandpa's obviously hilarious, although I disagree with the sister because murder is not a family matter. You know, she finds her boyfriend murdered, and instead of going to the police, she wants to go to the satanic cult meeting to confront her brother about it. And then, you know, her friend's like, you know, oh, should you go in there alone? And she looks at her friend and screeches, it's a family matter. And I'm like, no, it's actually a legal matter because you found your boyfriend murdered. So why? Why do you think it's a good idea to go, like, confront your brother who you think is a murderer by yourself? That was not very bright. I was very, like, disappointed that she did that. But, you know, but then later what really got me is that she kind of has this very kind of blasé attitude about her boyfriend being dead and murdered because, you know, they go to the party. They're looking for Roger, who's very cute, by the way.
He is, yeah, but he's not a very good actor.
I'm forgiven for that.
You're breaking Nathan's heart.
I know, I'm sorry. It's all about Tommy. It's all about Tommy. Big Nathan wants Tommy.
See, for me, it's all about Roger.
Nathan wants to pull his trigger, as he was asked.
He wants to get him off.
Her attitude, like when they get back to the party, and then her friend's hanging in the closet, and she's just like, oh, knock it off. That's not funny. I'm like, would your friend really play a joke like that? I mean, your boyfriend was murdered. Your friend knows that. And she knows that you were almost murdered at the cult meeting. I mean, would your friend really be like, that'd be a great time to play a practical joke on her like I did with the spider? That's a good idea.
The spider seems hilarious because it's like she just gets out of the tub naked with her friend there like it's nothing. Like they're just hanging out.
Girls do that.
She doesn't even get the soap off of her body. She just puts the robe over and she's still covered in soap. I'm like, what? That scene, actually, sorry to interrupt, but that scene with the spider, even though I know it was fake, it still made me cringe because I really, really hate spiders. Ugh.
I don't hate spiders, but the way that she was holding it and like rubbing it on herself, I was like, that was kind of a cringe moment. But I thought that, you know, like Eric said, I did guess who the killer was, and I'm going to obviously, you know, spoiler alert, you know, but we always spoil anyway, but the mother is the killer. And I thought that they really telegraphed that in one scene where right after a murder, you know, it's the sister, her mom, she sees her and her mom's fixing her hair and she's like, oh, mom, like, what happened to you? And she's like, oh, I was just out working. And I was like, no, you were out killing. It's what you were out doing. That's why your hair's all messed up.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I pinpointed it to.
I'm like, it just seemed too obvious.
I was already drunk at that point, I think.
But, no, I mean, it's you know, it was an interesting movie. Not quite like a classic, because I think it needs a little bit more slasher shenanigans to be a classic slasher movie, but I still highly recommend it to anybody that, you know, is looking for a fun late 80s, you know, slasher movie.
Okay. Speaking of people who are drunk, Justin.
I am not drunk, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, not yet, anyway. Yeah. I was surprised, actually, how much I enjoyed, I enjoyed it, but I thought it was, I'm trying to think of a better word than charming. It's kind of like has a charm to it. So it's although it's got some kind of weird elements, like you mentioned, Eric, with like the incest and the kind of sleaziness to it, it's also got some of the characters that you found more in sort of the earlier 80s slashers, which were quite likeable, like the sister and the friend you sort of mentioned. I was a bit disappointed that the friend didn't go to the party dressed as Princess Di, as she said she was originally going to do.
Yeah.
Because that would have been...
If you actually put the subtitles on the Blu-ray, it's spelled Di, D-I-E. So I don't know if that's a mistake or if there is a some kind of gothic drag queen out there called Princess Di.
Well, that's very prophetic.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it was rather, wasn't it? So, I mean, it kind of reminded me a little bit, although it didn't go to, quite the extent of Troll 2, but it had that kind of feel. Obviously, it had two grandpas, but also two filmmakers whose English wasn't the first language. And, in fact, I believe the director didn't speak any English, and we'd talk about that in the trivia. So there was kind of... I think the person, I think it was a woman who wrote the script for this. It was an American, presumably. But... it was, yeah, it had that kind of slightly kind of weird kind of fish out of water thing, which I kind of like with films, when you've got like a foreign director making a North American film, that makes things slightly, gives it a slightly off-kilter feel to it. But it had a kind of that kind of trash aesthetic to it, which I thought was fun. And I think from what I've seen with the director, that they, you know, he knows that they were making a campy horror movie. So although like a lot of these films, there wasn't too much winking to the camera, so which kind of works in its favour. What else that we haven't sort of mentioned? I noticed that whole thing about the 1968 on the gravestone. I think it was 20 years later, and it was kind of... and then you said it was supposed to... There was a line in it, was it, Eric, saying it's supposed to be 13 years after the death of the father?
Yeah, isn't there a thing that pops up?
There is somewhere, but I'm not sure where. I just know it's 13 years.
Yeah. So that was so that was all kind of bit odd, but again, sort of added to the kind of off-kilter charm. I like the character of Nora, the porn star.
Nora.
But she was quite fun. I liked her kind of her reaction to being scared is to make a Bloody Mary, which I thought was a great reaction.
And what was the drink she gave to the other guy?
It was sort of like
Devil's Delight.
Devil's Delight.
Does that exist?
It looked like kind of like sort of, I don't know, like melon liqueur, didn't it, or something, which is quite apt, wasn't it? I kind of guess, but yeah, I like the way that, yeah, so like I think you've mentioned, Amanda, that the guy who plays Tommy goes from 8 to 40 or 8 to 30, which is kind of, because the little girl was supposed to be 18, wasn't she? Who grew up to be 18. I was thinking if it's 1968, she would have been 0 years old in the prologue. So it was all kind of all sorts of weird, obviously things that had kind of gone, whoever did the continuity on the film didn't do a very good job on it. I like presumably that the party at the end was very, it was just so bizarre, wasn't it? You had all these different things, like you had the stripper, and everyone was like, the stripper was the same woman, because I recognise the tan lines who got her butt branded, wasn't she? It's a satanic ritual.
That's right, yeah.
So she turns up and does this strip, and I don't know, if I was at an 80s party and a stripper turned up and just took her clothes off, I don't know, all the women would be whooping. I don't know. It just got very strange. And then you had obviously some of the director's family, because there was quite a few kind of Indian sort of people, like Indian heritage there. And then you had the Japanese or Chinese woman who was talking, it was just kind of all over the place. And you had all these people dressed up in very strange. I know Halloween's different in the States as it is in here and probably Ireland, that when people go to Halloween parties, here people dress up, it's all very horror themes, all witches and ghouls, and you know, but I know in the States it's much more, people dress up as unicorns and fairies and things,
sexy pirates,
yeah, which is kind of But it's kind of, why is that? I've always wondered why that was in the States. That it's more
we do dress up in, you know, horror-themed stuff, but I think people just dress up as whatever the hell they want just because it's the day they can do that, so...
Right.
Okay. I want to dress up as Barbie Rapunzel.
That's what they do here. You know, when I used to live in West Hollywood, it was like a big excuse for a bunch of guys to put on dresses.
Justin.
And so we used to go down to West Hollywood because they would close off Santa Monica Boulevard and there would be just like hundreds of people. And it was like 2/3 dudes in dresses.
Well, Eric,
I think Eric wants to dress up as Grandpa.
And then get him off.
No, I don't want to get him off.
Oh, I said it! Oh,
No.
I hate you.
I want to get him off. Oh, Eric. Well, guess what's going at the end of the show?
Yeah, I wonder. Do you see what I have to put up with, Nate? Amanda? It's horrible.
I'm sorry.
You give as good as you get, Eric.
No. Yeah. But it's not like that in the Made for TV Mayhem podcast, I bet. But you're all nice.
Yeah, we're nice to everybody.
Yeah.
Except you, Eric. We talk about you all the time behind your back.
Oh. I can't believe I'm being bullied.
Oh, Eric.
This is my episode, by the way.
I know. Well, that's why you've been bullied. So, anyway, that were my thoughts. I thought it was a fun time, and because the director made Open House as well, didn't he? Which I thought was more mean spirited, wasn't it? Still quite trashy, but this I thought had a more sense of fun to it. I quite liked the satanic stuff. I mean, it wasn't taken very seriously, was it? And I thought I liked the blurb for the thing that says the kindly grandpa who turns out to be a satanic worshipper, and I'm thinking he wasn't kindly. Ever was he?
No,
at all. That even there's no pretense.
Well, he was. He had something really special for Tommy at the start.
He did.
Yeah, but and I liked. It was good fun. I mean, I think it was the whole thing that it was like basically the whole family was cursed, wasn't it? Ultimately, it was all they were, the blood.
But were you feeling like prom night at the end when Tommy's holding the mom?
I was thinking prom night. Yeah, it wasn't having the same effect on me emotionally, but it did pop into mind.
So you're telling me you didn't cry because
no.
Her love for her family was so deep that she had to kill all of their friends?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. I mean, her motive was basically she wanted her family back together. Is she just trying to dispel the bad element around her family? Is that her motive?
I felt it was trauma of the death of her husband.
I got that, but it's like she's killing all these people who obviously they're either kind of amoral or they're involved in that cult. I'm wondering if she's just trying to get family away from that.
Why didn't she just kill Grandpa? That's what I didn't understand.
Yeah, really.
But then again, it would have been a very short movie.
And how has Grandpa got away with, there's no inference at all that he's been in prison or anything for killing her husband, even though everyone knows he killed her husband?
Yeah.
It was very strange. But
yeah.
So, okay, well, shall we, how about some backgrounds? Who would like to talk about the background of the movie? Amanda, you mentioned that you had... You had some background.
Yeah, I don't have the Blu-ray, and I know there's interviews on there, so I don't know if I'm double-dipping here, but this is what I found online.
Believe me, Amanda, there's not a huge amount of information in the supplements on the Blu-ray, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Variety called it a nicely done, cleanly minor, clearly minor Halloween-themed shock film. They seem to enjoy it. They mentioned Grandpa a few times because he's amazing, by the way. It was shot in Simi Valley, Southern California. Camera started rolling in November 1986. They did not have a distributor at the time, so they just made a film and then hoped. And I guess it came out in 88, so it must have taken them a little while to find somebody to release it. High Pike's dad was actually a vaudeville performer, which I'm sure comes as a surprise to no one ever. He actually appeared in Blade Runner. I guess that's his most famous film. He worked in theater and musical reviews, and he actually talked about his horror work in two books. One is called Gods in Polyester, or A Survivor's Account of 70s Cinema Obscura. And then he wrote a chapter, which I believe he talks, and I haven't read this yet, but I think he talks about Hack-O-Lantern and something else he did in the 80s called Gods in Spandex, A Survivor's Account of 80s of Cinema Obscura. And then I already mentioned all that stuff about Gregory Scott Cummings. He was in a few horror films when he first got started, including Click the Calendar Girl Killer. I'm mentioning, so there's a filmmaker named Ross Hagen who did Click the Calendar Girl Killer, and actually that's who Gregory and I ended up talking about when we talked online a couple weeks ago. His first film was with Ross Hagen. And I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Born. I don't know if anybody here has seen Born, but that's where they're like taking people's kidneys. They're kidnapping people and stealing their organs. And I don't remember him having a big part in that. And he was also in Blood Games and something called Action USA. So it turns out that he became really good friends with Ross Hagen. And if you're not familiar with him, he was a character actor who in the 80s started to make his own films because I don't think he was getting a lot of work. And so he just started writing and producing movies for himself and his wife and a character actor named Hoke Howell were in all of his films or worked with Ross Hagen. And Gregory Scott Cumming worked on a couple of them with them as well. So he became really good friends with Ross Hagen. And he told me that, you know, Ross just basically did that because the work was drying up. And what was so great about those films was in something like Born, Ross Hagen was in his 60s and he made himself like the action hero of the film. And so when you watch these movies, you see like these kind of empowering, if flawed, films of this older guy envisioning himself as the hero and kicking ass, and they're really pretty amazing little films. So he had nothing but nice things to say about Ross Hagen. You might also recognize Gregory from Eric Phantom of the Mall. He's the guy with the earring, the cop. Do you remember him? And he gets the earring pulled out of his ear, and it ends up being a clue to what's happening at the mall.
I don't remember the character, but I do remember the movie.
He's the really hot cop.
Oh, is he fat and have a beard?
No. But he looks really amazing in it. Which also, Eric Phantom of the Mall also played on 35 at the Alamo. And that was amazing. Gregory Scott Cummings didn't get paid to make this movie. He did it for his demo reel, which I think most of the actors didn't get paid to make the film. That's my understanding. Katina Garner, who plays Amanda the mother, actually did voiceovers for, like, the California Raisins. And you can watch some of her stuff on YouTube. She has a couple of voiceovers she's put up herself. She also appeared on an episode of The Dating Game in the 70s, looking amazing. And she put a clips of that online if anybody wants to watch it. It's really, really fun. She's also a singer, and she performed with the USO shows in Vietnam in the early 70s. And she also plays the trombone. And that's my trivia.
Okay. Nathan? Do you have any trivia for us?
Well, I know that. I know you expected me to say no, didn't you?
I was expecting a no. Sorry.
Carla Baron or Barone. I don't know how to say her last name, but she was in. She played the sister in this movie. Who was Vera? Her name was Vera.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she was also in one of my favorite late '80s horror movies, Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama.
Now, who is she in that? Because I couldn't remember.
She's one of the friends. You know, like, there's the three girls who are already members of the sorority. And the imp turns her into the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. That's a kind of a big part, isn't it?
Yeah, she's like, she's in it throughout the whole movie. She gets decapitated.
Spoiler.
But anyway, well... I mean, it's kind of a spoiler, but she was already dead, so. And
all right.
She's one of those characters that you pretty much know from the beginning is not going to survive the film anyway. She's kind of a bimbo. You know, the good-hearted bimbos don't ever survive, unfortunately. As we're going to find out with our Patreon pick, but I'll get into that later. I was trying to find out if she was that same Carla... Baron that is the psychic now that does all these like psychic readings and all this stuff. I could not get a clear cut answer on if it was her or not, but I do know that somebody tried to talk to her about Sorority Babes and the Slimeball Bolarama and she blocked them on Twitter. So ooh. I know that.
Really?
So if it is her, she don't want to talk about it. And I doubt she'd want to talk about Hack-O-Lantern as well.
You think if she was a psychic, she would have blocked them before they asked?
Or she would have known back when she made these movies, okay, I'm going to regret making these, so maybe I shouldn't make them.
Yes.
I don't know. Well, in that case, Carla, I'm going to have to say boo to that because you need to own your movie past.
Yeah.
And stop traipsing around looking for ghosts at, you know, on one of your like TLC learning channel shows.
Oh,
I first noticed her. I first noticed because I don't know if you guys remember, but it's been a long time ago on MTV. They did this show called Fear, and it was where they would take like about five teenagers and they would hook cameras to them and they would send them to these places that are supposed to be haunted. And it was just, it was so phony to me. Like everything seemed very fake. And there was a thing where they all did a reunion show and the psychic Carla was on there. And this is the first time I'd seen her as the psychic and had wondered if that was the same one, a woman from these movies. And she came on there and she's like, one of you is holding on to the demons. And then like, you know, she was like basically like zeroing in on this one person, I thought. And then that person just had this big meltdown, sobbing fit. And she was like, we're going to get rid of the demons that are inside you. And I was just thinking, good grief. This just seems, insane to me because the show seemed fake enough already. And we're even getting more into the fakeness, I guess. I'm
not at all like actual psychics.
Hey, I'm a psychic. I've predicted many times that y'all would dislike a movie that I chose. So obviously, I've got some psychic. Well,
it's more of a self-fulfilling prophecy, not psychic phenomenon.
How dare you? But I mean, I spent so much time trying to find out if this was the same Carla or not. I personally think it is because why would she block somebody instead of just saying that wasn't me? Mm. So I think it was her.
That's extreme. That's like a Trump move.
Yeah, she's also in Terror Night, wasn't she? Did you mention that?
Oh no, I didn't mention Terror Night, but I like that movie a lot too. Mm.
Okay, Joseph, do you have any background for us?
Well, the only thing I have is only because I love Gina Fine so much, who plays Nora. She's credited as Angel Rush in this film, and I'm the odd man out in my love for her, but I just thought I'd mention that.
Ooh. Okay.
So I thought she was 80s fantastic.
Yeah, why are you the odd man out? What's wrong?
Well, I mean, I'm with a lady and three guys who are on the opposite spectrum of my sexuality.
I thought you meant in general the odd man out, like she wasn't a popular adult actress or something.
Well, she's a porn legend, but that's all.
I didn't know that. I had no idea. I just thought she was a girl who showed up in this movie and took off her clothes.
No, she's been doing it since the early 80s. I think she retired in the mid 2000 era, but she's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. She has great hair.
Yeah, she's amazing in this movie. She's really fun.
It's a bleach job. She's actually a brunette, so.
Justin, do you have anything for us?
Just a few bits. I saw on IMDb that it said the budget was $5.5 million. I think there was probably maybe 5,500. I don't know.
Yeah.
I did have a look back to see that there was a script written in 1986, which seems to mirror what you were saying, Amanda, if it was filmed in 1986, as Hack-A-Lantern, and it was an original screenplay by someone called David A. Eisenstark, who isn't credited on IMDb for this film. So it may be a completely different script, but it was it was registered in 1986. It seems that there's another register on the copyright sort of website for the film in 1988, and it looked like it was made under the title Death Mask.
An alternate title on here from that's the Australian title according to IMDb.
Okay, so
I saw it under the title Halloween Night.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was interesting that the I think Eric's got some. You've got some of the background that you would have found on the Blu-ray. So I won't go into that. But one of the things I did see was the director. It was interesting. Obviously, he was Indian, was from India, and he'd made his name I haven't seen it, but a feminist classic sort of a film in India, and then came to America and made kind of campy horror movies and sort of. Softcore sex romps, which is kind of an interesting career move, really, wasn't it? And I don't know if that was something he wanted to do or it was just what he was able to get. But he seemed to have quite a sense of humour about his films, so that was good. But apart from that, and the stuff that Eric's probably got, that's all the background I have, I think.
Well, I guess just real quickly, it might be important to mention that Jag Mundra directed Night Eyes, which came out in 1990 with Tanya Roberts, and that's probably the first of those type of films. It was really big when it came out. It was a theatrical. And,
wow, I haven't thought of that movie in years.
I'm a huge fan of the Night Eyes series, but admittedly, Night Eyes 4 is my favorite because it's just wacky as hell. But and Shannon Tweed's in 2 and 3. But Tanya Roberts was in the first one, and it was kind of a big deal, I think, because she'd been a Bond girl, and she was on Charlie's Angels, and then she did this pretty graphic sex thriller that with Andrew Stevens that had a huge theatrical release, and it predates like things like Basic Instinct. But after that, he really settled into the direct-to-video stuff, and he did all kinds of erotica. He did really fun movies like L.A. Goddess, which stars David Hevner, and it's hilarious, and it's meant to be. I mean, it's kind of a very lighthearted romp. And then he would do stuff like Wild Cactus, which had a darker dynamic to it. And I really liked his softcore stuff very much. He used to play like on Joe Bob Briggs when he had a show on the Movie Channel all the time. And he's a really interesting filmmaker, and I know nothing about him except for what you've just said, Justin. I've just have watched his films over the years, but I think it's really funny that he made that leap. I didn't know about his first film at all, but that he would make a leap from that to horror and then to erotica. I mean, those are three very specific genres, aren't they? And so it's kind of funny that he did that. And I agree. I don't know if he just fell into that or not, but I think he was pretty good at what he did.
Well, the other thing I sort of read about him was that he was brought up in a very strict household and was only allowed to see three films a year. Ooh. Oh, stripes. And so he was to go from a very strict kind of conservative upbringing to sort of making these kind of films, it's kind of, yeah, it's an interesting journey. And obviously, as you say, passed away, is it 2011? So, Beric, you've got, because I know you've got the Blu-ray, so...
There's surprisingly little information in the supplements. There's one bizarre supplement on the Blu-ray where, I don't know if any of you have seen it, it's a public public access TV interview with Jag Mundra and also Katina Garner. And it's shambolic. It's like a TV equivalent of The Hysteria Continues, because I don't know. I've never seen public access TV, but this sex work makes it look like it's very DIY. I suppose it is, like Wayne's World type thing. But Katina comes on and plays a trombone on it, and it was filmed a few years after Hack a Lantern had come out. And at this stage, Jack is speaking very, very fluent English, because I know, Justin, you said that Gregory Scott Cummins says on one of the DVD supplements that he didn't speak English at all while they're making Hack a Lantern. And then here he is on public access television a few years later, speaking very fluently and almost with an American accent. I don't know if he could pick it up that quickly, surely.
You can. I had some friends who were from the Philippines, and they moved to America while they were teenagers. And when I knew them, they were only like 16 and 18. And they had only lived in the country for like 3 years, but they wanted to fit in really badly. So I couldn't even tell that they had come from another country by the time I met them. And only like 3 years had passed. So I think it is possible. Yeah.
All
right. If you want it bad enough, yes.
Yeah.
Well, next to Spanish, I believe the English language is apparently the easiest to learn. That's what I've read anyway. So,
well,
there's a non sequitur for you.
Thank you for that, Ralph Wiggum.
You're welcome, Grandpa.
There's a story that keeps cropping up on all the extras, is that Jag Mundra broke his leg on the set when he fell into an open grave in the graveyard set. And Gregory Scott Cummins says that subsequently, because he was in hospital for a while, a lot of the scenes were filmed without him. So he didn't specify who directed the scenes that were shot without him, but apparently he was off the set for a while. And he tried then to see, he sued the producer of Jag sued the producer of Hack a Lantern, and also he sued the owners of the cemetery, even though they'd supplied the cemetery to him for free. So what a nice man.
Oh,
yeah. He after this, he went on to direct The Jigsaw Murders, which is a film I haven't seen yet. It's a thriller, and it was recently released on Blu-ray by Code Red. So it's out there as well. As you said, he directed 1990's Night Eyes, a film I haven't seen. But according to an interview I was reading, it was inspired by a real-life incident, because apparently the lead actor, Andrew Stevens, was secretly shagging Rod Stewart's wife. And that And so Andrew Stevens came to drag Mundra with the idea of... Because I believe Night Eyes is about some guy who's shagging a rock star's wife, is it?
Oh, I don't remember the full story. I just remember Andrew Stevens owns like a video surveillance company, and he's asked to... I guess he was asked to spy on Tonya Roberts by her husband. I'm doing this off memory because I haven't seen it in many years. And then Andrew Stevens' character carries through the entire series. He's like the video surveillance guy, and he always gets brought in, and then like sexiness ensues. But by the fourth one, I think because he produces them too, he has a production company. And by the fourth one, I think he was done doing those kinds of things. So I think he gets shot at the beginning of the film, and he's like, hey, can you come and film this sexy woman for me to this other guy? And then it's basically the same story with just a different guy playing the Andrew Stevens character.
Nice.
They're fun. They're really fun. I recommend all of them.
Okay. He went on to also direct a 1997 film called, prophetically, Shades of Grey.
Oh.
20 years before 50 Shades of Grey, he had Shades of Grey, which was an erotic thriller. As we said, he died in 2011, but his daughter is currently working in the in Hollywood. She was in the production department on films like Being John Malkovich and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So she's working on a higher caliber film than Hack-A-Lantern or Night Eyes. Not that they're better films, but she's probably getting paid better. The metal band in the dream sequence at the start are a band called DC La Croix, who I'd never heard of, but they did exist, and they did have three albums, and that the track they perform is called Devil's Son, and we'll be hearing it at the end of the podcast.
So good.
It's from their 1986 album Crack of Doom, which is inspired by Justin's buttocks.
I think you're more like your buttocks, Eric.
No, your buttocks.
Yours, I imagine. Yours.
I do think Justin's buttocks are incredible. Does that help?
Did you see them?
No, I just like to. I forgot I haven't hit on Justin yet, so I had to throw that in there.
Okay. Okay, that's all. That's all the bump I have. There is a commentary on the Blu-ray with the producer, but it's the information you get is scant. I mean, the moderators are trying their best to get information out of him, but he doesn't really remember much. He gives sort of monosyllabic answers, so there's not a huge amount of information to be gleaned from that. But I do recommend, if you're a fan of the film, to pick up the Blu-ray, because I'm imagining it looks a zillion times better than it ever did on VHS, because it does look like a major theatrical release. Speaking of which, sorry, Justin, I was just going to ask, did you find any evidence of a UK release at all? Because I looked on the BBFC website, which is the UK version of the MPAA, and they registered it in 2005 for a company called Orbit Video. But I couldn't see any evidence of any previous VHS releases, and I actually couldn't find any evidence of a DVD release from Orbit Video either. So,
I've never seen it. So, no, it probably means we didn't get a release over here. But one thing I just could mention, that public access TV show, is the woman on there. The other woman is Maria Grant.
Yes, Maria Gant. Yeah,
Gant. Sorry, and is she the sister of Katina Garner, who plays Amanda? Because it couldn't make you sure. Because she's in the film as well, isn't she?
Isn't she the one who's killed with the...
In the bathroom.
Her corset is tightened, yeah.
You know what? They look alike now that you mention that.
Yeah, because he said something about the... Because it's definitely worth it. It's kind of... like you say, it's very bizarre extra. And they're being interviewed by like a 70-year-old woman who looks very like a nana. Who's kind of... it's kind of very, very, very strange. But I thought that death scene as well, which I've never really seen a film where somebody has their corset done up so much that their boobs don't quite pop out, but almost pop out, and then get stabbed in the back. But she's kind of wearing, it's just very strange, again, that whole weird Halloween thing, because she's dressed up like one of the housewives from The Stepford Wives, you know, the original 1970s one, like Nanette Newman. We were all walking around the supermarket in their kind of Laura Ashley bonnets and sort of floppy hats, and it's kind of a very strange costume to wear to a Halloween party. But
she had her eyes on Roger too. Everybody wanted Roger. That was her death knell, right?
Roger looks like Ricky Schroeder. Do you all fancy Ricky Schroeder?
Yes, he's adorable.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, my God. But it's still about Tommy. Gregory Scott Cummings in these horror movies, and when he first started, oh, Jesus Christ. So just a really weird piece of trivia. So before I met Gregory Scott Cummings on Facebook, I had seen Click the Counter Girl Killer. My friend and I fell in love with him. He plays Tommy Malone in that. And I was having surgery. And so my friend wrote to Gregory Scott Cummings. She found him online before Facebook. And she said, hey, my friend is having surgery. Would you send her something? And he sent me an 8x10, and he signed it Tommy Malone. And so I got this right after my surgery. I got this 8x10 in the mail from him. And it was like the sweetest thing ever. I love him. I love him.
You know, it seems like there's something for everybody in this movie. Amanda loves Tommy. I love Roger. Joseph loves Bleach Woman. And Eric loves...
No, like, don't say it.
Get him off.
Eric. Yeah. I was going to get mad at Nathan for calling her Bleach Woman, but go ahead and insult Eric. That's funnier.
Well, I mean, I don't mean Bleach Woman, but you said it's a bleach job, and I could not remember her name for anything, so I didn't think of any other... Nora.
Credited as Angel Rush, but her real name is Gina Fine.
Well, who did you like, Justin? You're the only one that hadn't said who you thought was attractive in this film.
I haven't said who I thought was attractive in the film either.
Yes, Grandpa.
Yeah, Grandpa, get him off.
Actually, Eric, I didn't think anybody in this film was necessarily your type.
There's somebody at the party with their back to the camera who looks interesting, but that's it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I can't remember if there's anyone that I found.
The drummer with the metal band at the
yes,
party.
Yes, that's true.
He has huge hair.
I thought the lead singer was kind of cute. He reminded me of that guy that was the VJ on MTV, Alan Hunter. Was that his name or the other guy? The guy with the big hair from the MTV early days. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, never mind. I can't remember.
I'm going to Google Alan Hunter VJ.
It's not Alan Hunter. It was another guy. Oh. I can't remember his name.
Google.
He hated Madonna.
Hated Madonna.
Oh, Adam something. Was it Adam something?
I can't remember now.
Big hair.
He had super big hair. He looked like the lead singer of this band, and I was thinking,
Adam Curry,
was
it?
Adam Curry, yeah.
Yeah, Adam Curry.
His hair was big. He looks kind of like Leif Garrett, actually.
Yeah, a little bit.
Cool. Well, okay, well, that, I think, is Hack-A-Lantern. So, shall we... Joseph, do you want to read out what people on Facebook have been saying about their relationship with this film?
Sure. Let's see here. John Matthews says, my first introduction to this film was the recent Massacre Video Blu-ray. I had never heard of this one back in the day. It didn't get a release here down here in Australia. It comes off very strange. I can't tell if it's trying to wink at the camera or if it's trying to play it straight. The whole Hail Satan stuff is campy gold. I think the bizarre tone might be due to the director who came over from India. From the interviews I saw of him on the disc, he was indeed taking the whole thing very, very seriously. It's a Troll 2 situation almost. However, the movie is actually good because Jagmundra actually knows what he's doing, unlike a Claudio Fragasso. So that was John Matthews. Ara Alishan, whose brother picked this, says, I'll be honest, I don't remember much about Hack-A-Lantern, but I'll venture to guess that this was one of my brother's listener picks. Well, either him or Nathan. I can't say that it made much of an impression, but I may revisit if your podcast episode persuades me to do so, as I am generally a sucker for Halloween horror.
And oh, him or Nathan, eh? Let me just say to that, the fact that he said him or Nathan, let me just say that that means that his brother has amazing taste in film.
Well, I'm sure Mike Alishan will appreciate that. And Mike Alishan says, I love this film. It's such a fun Halloween slasher. Doesn't take itself seriously, but there are genuinely creepy moments in it, too. What a great mix. Can't wait to hear Amanda Reyes share her thoughts with you guys on this, too, as her Hysteria Lives review was a fun read. Jamie Allen says, the first episode on a film I've not seen. Time to watch that Blu-ray. Tom Virtuoso says, somebody watch this? And then finally, this one says, ordered the Massacre Video Blu-ray, so hopefully it'll come in time. Ooh, Matron. And that was from Simon Logan.
Ooh,
cool. That's Simon Logan.
Simon Logan needs his own little jingle, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone.
That's,
thank you, Simon Logan. Thank you, Simon Logan. Well, we've got some, because we're a little bit rushed for time today, so we're going to do a couple of feedbacks now and save the rest for our next episode, which we'll be telling you what it is shortly. But this is how to get in contact with the show.
The content of this podcast was provided by Justin Kurzweil, Eric Frillfall, Nathan Johnson, and Joseph Henson. If you enjoy our program and are willing and able to provide a donation, please visit us on Patreon and become a content designated subscriber. That's patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues. For non-subscriber PayPal donations and general feedback, our address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. To listen and interact, simply search for The Hysteria Continues on iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Susie versus Toya forever.
Yes, so please do go and contact the show. We're going to read out a couple of just bits of feedback. Before we do that, we've got voicemail, so I'm going to play that for you first.
Hello, you sexy devils of Hysteria Continues. This is Jay the Haunt Cub. I just wanted to make a few comments. I only have 8 episodes left before I've listened to the entire back catalog. I just listened to episode 123, Hard to Die, so I guess I'm about a year out, because it looks like you guys put that out in June of last year. Wanted to make a comment that Nathan needs to sing more jingles, because that was hilarious. This is referring to the Fig Newton jingle. And I also enjoyed your little chat about things that, like TV movies that scared you as a kid. Right after I heard this episode, I watched The Dummy on YouTube, and I found it absolutely hilarious, but I could see where that one part would creep out a little kid, but it's pretty funny if you go back and watch it now. I had an idea for a top three. I don't know if you've done this in the 8 episodes I have left to listen to, or if possibly you did it long ago and I somehow missed it, but I would love to hear maybe a top three of horror movies that you've watched as an adult that had scenes that either almost turned you off of horror movies or stayed with you for quite some time. I'd be interested to hear that. Anyway, guys, keep up the great work. Still loving the show. And I have the most recent one still to listen to. But anyway, take it easy. Bye.
Well, thank you, Jay Horncub. Good to hear from you. One of our rare voicemails. So if you do want to get in contact with the show and leave a voicemail, then please do. Or send us a JPEG. Just an audio file of your rambles. But send us a new JPEG if you want to. Thank you, Jay. I mean, I the top three, you keep on threatening to bring back the top three, don't we? And I think we should do a top three.
Amanda had an idea for a top three too.
Hmm. And what was that, Amanda?
Well, we already do. I think I've told everybody about it. I want to do the top three hottest people in horror.
Okay.
Or slashers, I guess.
Well, next time you're back on the show, Amanda, we'll do that.
Yay.
Yeah, that sounds good. But we'll make a note of all the top three suggestions, and who knows, you may hit that cat again at some point. So.
I'll work on more jingles.
Yes, we need more jingles. Well, we've actually got a jingle for you after the credits. Do we want to do that after? When do we want to do that? Shall we do that now, or shall we do that after we've finished the feedback?
Let's do the feedback, and then we'll do that. I also have my game. My game is returning. So.
And okay. Eric's has a joke.
Wow.
Okay. I do have a joke.
We've got it all. We're going to have to pack it all in, as it were. So who would like to go first with some feedback? Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, this one says, "Hi guys, just wanted to get your thoughts on something which I don't think has come up before on the podcast, and that is your thoughts on slasher fiction. So not nonfiction books about slasher movies, but actual novels which could be seen as slashers. And before Eric pulls out his copy of Scotty Beam's Captain Kirk up his arse, I said slasher fiction, not slash fiction. There are the obvious ones like the novelizations of slasher movies or the based on novels such as Eric Morse's Friday the 13th series or the Friday books released by Black Flame Books in the mid-2000s. But there's also novels like The Last Final Girl by Stephen Graham Jones featuring a slasher who dresses up like Michael Jackson. Have any of you read these or other slasher books? And if so, what did you think of them? Let's see. I'm just going to quickly answer him. I used to collect a lot of those books. Like, I had Joyride by, was it Stephen Cry, Nathan? Or
yeah, it was something like that. Yeah,
it was great. Yeah, and
if you see it, the artwork is a statue like with a severed head on it. So.
Yeah, and I used to collect a lot of those, you know, those Fear Street and Goosebump books and those little cheapy, like, dollar books you could get from used bookstores that were basically slasher movies. They're, like, 100 pages long, quick reads. They were a lot of fun, just to answer.
What about our favorite one, Joseph? Deadly Detention.
Yes, that one is.
That was one of the best.
Yes, I really did like that.
If for all you wondering about it, Deadly Detention is like this motley crew. It's sort of like a Breakfast Club because you got the nerd and the popular kid, and it's just all these like different like kids in the school that have been kept for detention, and the school gets sealed, like locked up, and they get trapped in there, and somebody in there between them and the teacher is a murderer and starts killing them off in really gruesome ways too.
What about you guys? Do you guys read slasher?
I read some of the – a company called Black Flame brought out some Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street spin-off novels, I suppose about 10 years ago now, maybe more. And I read a few of them. They weren't marvelous, but I thought they were you know, adequate time killers. They had titles like Hate, Kill, Repeat and Friday the 13th, Church of the Divine Psychopath. and there was a couple of Jason X spin-off ones as well. So, I mean, they were okay, but they weren't earth-shattering. I've never read a novelization of any of the movies.
There was a young adult series that came out. I think it was before The Black Flame, Friday the 13th, and they did Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street. Do you remember these? And I had the Friday the 13th, but there was, for legal reasons, they couldn't have certain elements in the novels. So in, like, the Friday the 13th, they could have the mask, but they couldn't have Jason as the killer. So somebody would have to find the mask and put it on, and then they would sort of become possessed and kill people. Oh. And they're really good. I had four of them, I think. I don't know how many there were. And I feel like I might have had one of the Halloweens or the Nightmare on Elm Streets, but I don't remember reading it. But those were pretty good.
Mm. Have you read any of the novels?
Yeah, I read this Stephen Cry, the Joyride one, which I thought was really good fun. Mm. And I've kind of read some of the novelizations, like The Fun House and Halloween 2 and Halloween, years ago. So I remember those. I did read, he'd mentioned The Final Girl one by, I can't remember his name, but I did get a copy of that, and I started to read it. It was a bit too frenetic for me. I found it a little bit too kind of, it was almost, not exactly like Rob Zombie, but it was just very, very pop culture, so much so that it was almost like a haiku rather than a novel for me. I found it just a bit too full on. But I'm sure some people, other people would really enjoy it. But yeah, no, interesting question. So thank you for.
Do you remember? You guys probably don't. But so about 10 years ago, One Life to Live did a really interesting. Speaking of meta, they did a really interesting meta thing where they had a character play a woman who was a novelist, and she wrote a book called The Killing Club, and then they had the writer of the soap write a book called The Killing Club under her name and released it. And when that happened, they had a serial killer in Landview killing some of the characters from the show. And it was a slasher. And in the book, it's a different story that's kind of a slasher. And there's references. So in the TV series, they actually reference Blood and Black Lace in a murder. And in the book, they reference Halloween. And I believe it's pretty much a slasher. And the storyline was also a slasher. And I've been trying to find the clips to do a review of it, but I haven't been able to accumulate the episodes properly. But that was really interesting. And I haven't read the book in years, but I remember it was really good.
Oh, it sounds interesting.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it does sound good. So, excellent. All right. Well, who would like to go next?
This email's, he goes on to say, might make for an interesting topic of discussion unless none of you have read any of them and aren't interested in doing so, in which case this email has been a bit pointless. But we have read a lot of these. Simon Logan, that's Simon Logan. We have read these.
Oh, so, Simon, also check out Helloween. I don't remember who wrote it, but it's called Helloween. And it's not necessarily slasher, but it's about a group of like, oversexed teenagers getting trapped in these caves with these like creatures. It's really good.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you, Simon Logan. Nathan, would you want to read yours out?
Yes, I'll read mine out. Mine says, "Dear Justin, Eric, Joseph, and Nathan, I discovered the hysteria continues once I was cast as the villain in a horror film, and I was researching the genre, and slasher films in particular. I fell in love with your show, your humor and group chemistry, and your passion for these films, even though you did not offer a glowing review of my grandmother, Vera Miles, in Psycho."
Ooh.
Oh, I know. "You turned me on to many classics I was unfamiliar with before I started listening, including My Bloody Valentine, The Burning, The Prowler, and Graduation Day. The new horror film, Bedeviled, is released in the U.S. on August 11th. I play Mr. Bedeviled, and the film follows the slasher model closely. I wondered if you would be interested in covering it. I would love to do a podcast interview with you guys. If we do that, I need to hear the cat flushing the toilet. one more thought. I know you are on holiday right now, but if you guys have any interest in seeing the film, let me know, and I will connect with marketing and try to get you digital screeners. Also, if a review of the film or an interview isn't of interest, I'd still love to come on the show and review something else with you guys, if that's possible. Cheers, Jordan SO." And he also, thank you, Boomer. He also sent the trailer to us. I mean, I watched the trailer for Bedeviled, about a week or so ago, and it looks interesting. So, I mean, I would be interested in checking it out personally. And sorry about the, Vera Miles from Psycho. But I don't remember saying anything bad about her myself.
Neither do I. What did we say?
I don't know.
It was probably Eric who did it.
It wasn't.
I think it's Justin.
Positive.
Justin was very critical, I bet.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't critical. Though maybe it was when we maybe talked about the initiation.
Oh, yeah.
That may have been more likely.
Oh, right.
God,
Nathan wasn't even there when we did that.
No.
He was there when we did the commentary for the Blu-ray.
That's true. That's true. Let's see if we can make that happen, because we can certainly do it as a recently seen. So, if you get us a copy of the screener, then we can have do it as a recently seen at the very least. So, and have a chat about horror royalty. So thank you for getting in contact.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Eric, how about you?
Yes, okay. Hi, chaps. John here from Down Under again. I appreciate you reading my last email and thought I'd send another one. Ghost Dance is a title so obscure I haven't even heard of it. It got me thinking, I would really like to hear you guys discuss about lost or insanely obscure slashers. You may have done it previously on an episode, but I can't recall. Anyway, in honor of you doing Ghost Dance, I would like to bring to your attention an insanely obscure American slasher from 1989 called Gun's Eyes. It's a very brutal and dark late 80s slasher. This film, to my knowledge, never had a VHS release in the US or the UK. The only release in the world, I believe, was Australia. And maybe Germany. Plot simply, a man buys a World War II Luger pistol only to be possessed by it, as all its previous owners were. It eventually merges with his hand, so he goes on a shooting spree. Sounds kind of like Videodrome. It's a great film. All I know, it was shot in Osage Beach, Missouri, USA. None of the cast and crew have done anything else. Please see a scan of the tape below. And he sent us an image of the cover. As you can see, it depicts a woman gunned down in her driveway by the killer. Very brutal. Anyways, keep up the good work. Thought I would bring this one to your attention. The only copies of it are floating in the hands of Aussie VHS collectors. No copies exist online. Mine is in storage. I'll need to pull it out and give it another long overdue watch. Ooh, or misses. Kind regards from John Matthews. So Gun's Eyes I've never heard of, obviously. I'm not the great obscure slasher person, though. And that's you, Justin, or possibly Nathan and Joseph. Have you heard of Gun's Eyes, anyone?
No.
I had heard of it like a long time ago, but I'd forgotten about it. Never seen it. Never saw a copy anywhere. So
I do like the idea of the gun merging with his hand and being possessed by the gun. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting about whether or not you can arguably have a slasher with a gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the other
Friday. Thing. Friday the 13th would be very different if you just went around with a machine gun like Rambo.
Yeah. I mean, because talking of obscure slashes, I remember one that Jake Helgren, who did Bloody Homecoming and Varsity Blood, and is making lots of rom coms, I think, in Hollywood at the moment. But he had a big. He sent me a copy of The Mirage, which was.
I love that movie.
But it's very obscure because it never actually got a... I don't know if it has got a release now in the States, but it only ever got a release in the UK on video. And he sent me a copy of the video, which is kind of very rare. So that's how I was able to review it for the for Hysteria Lives. But
I found the director. He's like a wedding photographer now.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's also got Kenny Johnson from The Shield is in there as well.
Okay. That, maybe it would have been quite a fun little movie. And it's got that great sequence at the beginning when a couple are having sex in the back of a truck.
That's
They're driving.
And they have a brick down on the accelerator, don't they, to keep it moving?
Yeah, and they're in the back, and it's just going across the desert, and it's just driving and driving and driving when they're in the back having sex. So it was, I don't know why that... It was just probably a rights thing, but that was an obscure film that's worth catching, sort of desert-based slasher, a bit like Blood Frenzy, but not quite as cheesy.
Savage Water.
Savage Water.
The most obscure of them all.
Yeah.
Hairdresser Massacre.
Yeah.
And that movie's a classic.
And Voodoo Massacre. Although I'm still trying to find Hackoween. That's a lost treasure I need to find. Stars a broom and a mop. Yeah.
Well,
I need to find that as well.
Okay, so, all right, well, I've got one here, and I say, if you don't hear yours read out this time, say we have got a lot of feedback, which is great, so keep them coming, but we'll be picking up the slack next time. We're recording an episode in advance next week. So this one is, hello, gentlemen. I thought I'd get in touch to let you know how much I've been enjoying The Hysteria Continues since I discovered it a few months ago. The great mix of personalities, apart from Eric... different viewpoints, double entendres, and shared depth of knowledge truly make you stand out from the rest. I always thought I knew a lot about horror films, but you four really put me to shame. Initially, I listened to the episodes covering films that I was familiar with, and now I'm making my way through all the rest and discovering so many hidden gems that I didn't know about, both in the main reviews and the recently seen section. Growing up in the post-video nasties era of the 80s and 90s, so many unsung classics... slasher classic, sorry, passed me by. Often, if your local video shop didn't have a movie, that was the end of it, and even the big names like the original Friday 13th could be hard to come by since shelf space would be devoted to the then newer later sequels. It's great these films are finally getting their due thanks to podcasts like yours and labels like Arrow Video and 88 Films. Now I can learn about the most obscure slasher film on Hysteria Continues, then, more often than not, go straight out and buy a beautifully presented, lovingly restored Blu-ray packed with extra features. It honestly feels like a golden time to be a horror and slasher movie fan, and I love it. Of course, the downside to all of this is Arrow Video and 88 Films now have all of my money. If I can, I'd like to finish with a quick question. Are there any of your personal slasher favourites that you've yet to cover on the podcast? Bye for now and keep up the good work. That's Billy from Gateshead in the northeast of England. And he says, P.S. If anyone is interested, I've got a horror-themed Instagram account under the name @BillyLovesHorror, all one word. So... are there any kind of any big ones you haven't covered yet, Eric?
The Dorm that Drip Blood.
Yeah.
Death Nurse.
No, we said any good ones.
And Nightmare on Elm Street 4 with the girl with the big hair.
Yeah.
The Sleepaway Camp sequels.
Yes.
You guys haven't done the Sleepaway Camp? You guys haven't done the Sleepaway Camp sequels?
No.
Why did I think you had?
Not yet.
Oh, wow. I guess in my dreams.
Blood and Black Lace.
Oh, shut up.
I mean, there's a ton on my list that I can't wait for us to cover.
Strip Nude for Your Killer, which is apt considering a certain scene in Hack-A-Lantern.
Yeah, there's still a lot out there, isn't there? But we've got some very interesting listener picks to get through first.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequels.
Yeah.
Yes, especially The Next Generation. I cannot wait to talk about that one.
We're going to be going for a long time.
It's my favorite sequel.
Ever in the history of everything?
No, in history of everything, my favorite sequel, it varies, but at the moment it's Slumber Party Massacre Part 2 with the guitar drill.
Yeah, of course it is.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just sort of seeing we're approaching the 2-hour mark, so we better let's zip through. So thank you for the feedback, and we'll have some more next time. We've also got a few bits to get through. Well, in the case of Eric's joke, to get through. So why don't we get to that, Eric?
Yes. Why don't we?
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
Did you know they wanted to hire a fish that was off its head on...
I'm so sorry, but Boomer wanted to hear your joke, so he's gotten off the bed.
Okay, Boomer. Did you know that they wanted to hire a fish that was off its... Did you know that they wanted to hire a fish that was off its head on marijuana to play the part of Grandpa? In the end, they chose a different type of high pike. Thanks, Amanda.
Boomer, you can go back to shaking now, please.
I liked it.
Thank
Actually,
you.
I didn't get it. Is pike a fish?
Yes.
A type of fish?
Yeah.
Oh.
A high pike.
See, I didn't know that. I'm not up on my fish lingo.
All right. And you've watched Blood Lake.
Yeah, but they didn't talk a lot about fishing in that. They talk about skiing.
Okay. Of course they do, yeah.
And quarters.
Okay, I'd just like to say you are all welcome.
So, it was very good because it was a grandpa joke because grandpa's the best.
Yeah, get him off, Eric.
And we know how much Eric loves grandpa.
Shut up.
That's right. He couldn't stop thinking about grandpa, so we had to write a joke dedicated to him.
Hey. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of grandpa, we should do after the credits.
Yes. Well, here is the...
Because Amanda can. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
The new trailer. Well, the new jingle that Joseph sent, so...
That was fucking brilliant.
Very 80s.
All right, Amanda, since you're our guest, I'm going to let you go first. So after the final scene, when we see the final reveal, Boomer, if you don't stop shaking. He's very restless. What do you think happened in the future with the family?
Well, I think now that the mom is gone, Tommy and I could finally be together. So that's what happened.
And Roger went off to star in Silver Spoons.
Yeah, I guess because we didn't talk about it at the very, very end, Roger gets... So there, apparently there's a supernatural thing, and Grandpa really was satanic. Like, he was really in touch with the devil, because right before he dies, he was supposed to give some kind of power to Tommy during this ritual, but then, of course, the sister came in and ruined it. And at the very end, as he's dying, he does something with his eyes, right? And then it goes into Roger, and then Roger becomes, like, the leader of the satanic cult. So there is actually some sort of supernatural tinge to this. And I guess Roger becomes the leader of a cult. So I feel like I have nothing to say after that.
But if you're going to hook up with Roger after the credits, that means you've got to become the mistress of Satan.
Yeah, well, but I'm going to hook up with Tommy.
I just
exercise
them. Of course,
yeah, sorry. Sorry, and Nathan will become the mistress of Satan.
No, I exercise them. I brought in, you know, an exorcist. You know, they did their thing, and, you know, he's good now.
He's real good, baby.
Yeah, but then Tommy and Amanda battle you in the sequel.
Yes, it's going speaking of boarding house, when we talked about earlier, it's going to be one of those kind of psychic battles.
I thought it would be like that fight they had on the stairwell where one of them's holding, like, a mop handle, and the other one has, like, a sword.
The mop from Hakoween.
Yes, it made a cameo during the fight scene at the end. So we'll have that kind of battle. And we're going to win because I've got Tommy on my side.
Yeah. Sorry, Nathan. It's true.
Yeah, well, Tommy lost the first battle.
He didn't lose the first battle. He was better than the first battle, and he walked away.
It's all very Toya versus Susie, this Roger versus Tommy.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow, it's the first Susie Toya reference we've had this episode.
Yeah.
I know.
Toya rules.
I do wonder if, it's a shame that Amanda didn't get her trombone out. So I think after the credits that Amanda would come back from the dead and go round.
I thought you meant me.
Sorry.
Yeah, I thought you meant Amanda as well.
No, the actress.
I thought that was
Katina
a sexual
Garner.
Reference, and I'm like, do I have to get my trombone out for you guys now?
Well.
Justin.
But,
you're so rude.
He
you're
does
so rude
like me.
No.
He does like me. He wants to see my trombone, guys.
Well, it's going to... I was talking about Amanda's trombone from the film. You know, Amanda... You know, because she plays a trombone, doesn't she, in that clip. She'd come back. And she would do a kind of... She'd come back from the dead and then go after to revenge her death. And she would, in a kind of a tribute to the town that dreaded sundown, she would stick a knife on the end of her trombone and kill people with it.
I would watch that.
Mm. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
So who hasn't done their end of the credits? Joseph.
Joseph.
I was just going to say the mother would probably go somewhere and someone would ask her what she's been doing. And she said, probably working in the orchard. Or I'd just shut the movie off and go get some oral satisfaction from Gina Fine. So,
oh,
wow. Oh.
Is that Nora? That's
graphic. Yeah.
That is not.
Oh, you can talk about Justin's timetable and Grandpa carried back, but I can't make a reference to
being fellacious.
Don't forget, Justin even talked about Amanda's trombone.
Yeah. Right. I'm so embarrassed, Justin.
Well, it's a good job Amanda in the film wasn't playing bongos.
Get your bongos out.
Yeah. So
get your pink oboe out.
I did think it's a shame that the mother in the film, because she had that lovely long blonde hair, didn't she? She didn't like do a kind of Jan Brady flick as she walked. That would have made it.
Have you guys ever seen that movie 3:15 Moment of Truth with the girl that's got the braid and she uses her braid as a whip?
No. Yeah, I was thinking like the Sindel character from one of the Mortal Kombat games where she flicks her hair and like hits people with it. She should have done that with her hair. Her hair was like 200 feet long.
It was.
I loved her hair. Watch her in The Dating Game. In The Dating Game, she's got the exact same hair, but she curls the front of it but leaves the back straight. So it's kind of like an early mullet, but it's super sexy on her because she's like really beautiful. Just watch her on The Dating Game. She looks amazing.
Cool. Well, she'll dig that out. So, okay, what we got anything else? Because I know we are being joined by Amanda shortly, or literally in 5 minutes after the show finishes, for our next Patreon pick, which is going to be Humanoids from the Deep. So we're going to be talking of fish and pikes. There's a different type of fish movie, but we're going to be doing that. So if you were interested in hearing us talking about Humanoids from the Deep, or any other kind of non-slasher related fun horror, 80s or maybe not even 80s, but horror movies, then it's very simply just join up to be a patron to support the show. And then you get extra special hidden access, secret access to our mini-sodes talking about other horror movies. So, and that's how do they do that, Joseph? Just go to the Patreon site.
Yes, patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues and just sign up.
Excellent. Well, there you go.
Wow.
That was my cat.
Who agrees?
Yeah.
Oh, it's her cat. I don't...
Whose cat was that then?
That's mine.
Oh, it's your cat. Oh, okay. What's your cat's name?
His name is Huck.
Huck. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we have a cat named Tom as well. Tom and Huck.
Tom and
Huck. Very literate.
Yes.
And
to close off things, Joseph, you've got another part of your game, haven't you?
Yes. People have been asking me when it's coming back. Here it is. Tristan Comer, congratulations. You guessed correctly last time, which was Silent Rage. Shut up.
Boo.
Anyway, here's the clues to the new movie I'm thinking of. Number one is A Fair Day. Number two is A Grave Night. And number three is That's What I Call a Headache.
Mm.
Yeah, so.
Okay, mysterious.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, right. Well,
anyway.
You know what to do. So, well, thank you for listening. And Amanda, thank you ever so much for coming on the show. Do you want to tell us where people can find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, I guess I'm on Twitter at Made for TV Mayhem. That seems to be where I am most days, updating things, and my blog, which is also just madefortvmayhem.com. I'm going to be, I don't know when this goes out, but on September 4th, I'm going to be speaking at the Austin Film Society and presenting a very rare screening of Fantasies, the 1982 slasher film made for television with Suzanne Plachet. And I'm going to be talking about soap opera actors in primetime television, TV movies. And I will also be back in England in October, speaking at Kent University at the end of October. I don't know what day yet. If anybody's around, it's called At Home with Horror, if people want to look up that conference. And I'm going to be on the commentary track for a TV movie called The Spell, which is coming out through Shout Factory on the 5th.
Excellent. Well, I watched The Spell not that long ago, actually, last year on holiday, I think. So that was a fun movie. So it's definitely one to get. And also talking about commentaries, The Slayer has just been come out on Arrow Films, and we got mostly good reviews, haven't we?
Yeah, thought for that one, I think we did. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think I've read anything bad about The Slayer.
No, it was Madhouse. We
Oh, Madhouse was a little.
We also have the House on Sorority Row coming out. That has been announced, by the way. So.
Yeah, so that's for 88 films. So that will be coming out, I think, in September, October, I think. But
October.
October, okay. So, yeah, well, thank you for listening. So say goodbye to the good people.
Well, before we do that, we should announce our next episode.
Oh, yes, we should, yes.
I believe this is an Ara Alashan pick, maybe. I can't remember. I'm sorry if I'm remembering wrong, but we're covering Dario Argento's Phenomena.
Yay.
And provided Hurricane Harvey hasn't killed him, we'll be joined by Johnny Krug. So
okay. It is an Ara Alashan pick, yes.
Yes, okay. Yes.
And also, we're just kind of, so look forward to that. And also, although this will be going out next week, so it would have been out there. So just say, obviously, very sorry to hear about the passing of Toby Hooper, which we just heard about in the last couple of hours when we've been recording the podcast. So, you know, big props out to Toby and all, everything he did for the horror movie. And another horror great has passed away, which is very sad. Mm-hmm. But end of an era, so... But so thank you, Toby, for all the screams.
Indeed.
Thank you for directing the greatest movie ever made.
Life Force.
Texas Chainsaw.
Spontaneous combustion. Eric.
I think Life Force is better than Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, dear.
How dare you, Eric? If I had wine, I would throw it on you.
Yeah, well, I'd flick my hair if I had hair and whip your face. Like,
oh, you did like that 3:15 like movie Amanda's talking about.
Yeah, or like Romy accidentally does it to Michelle in Romy Michelle's High School. That's
right. Oh, that would hurt, but it looked really good, though.
Yeah.
Flick your back hair, Eric.
I could do that, yeah.
And on that bombshell, say goodbye to the good people. We're playing out some hair metal and Eric saying his love for Grandpa.
I'm not going to say it.
You've already said it. It's our. You've already.
Yeah, I probably said it so fast that you can't edit it properly. So.
Oh, well, I can edit it. Don't you worry.
So okay, right. Well, thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, all you gorgeous people.
Goodbye, forever.
I can't find my biro. We have to do everything to his time. Yeah.
I like his time table. Well, all your pictures are a little emo.
Sometimes I'll say things that make no sense just because I like how it sounds. I love that Joseph said goodbye forever and we're recording another episode like right after that.
No, I don't want to get him off.
Oh, he said it!